Here we go, and a one, and a two, and welcome to the Tales from the Long Box podcast. This is episode 71. Oh, wait, is it 71? Crap, I hate it when I do that. One moment.
It could be episode 71.
I think it's 70, it might be 72. Sorry, people.
71.1.
Oh, yeah, it's 71, okay. Yeah, 71. And the title is Random Tales from the Long Box. I am Chris Mosby, and I am dead tired. Anyway, go ahead.
I'm Caleb Girard, and it's actually cold here in Arizona.
Cold? Wow.
That is crazy. And it's not cold up here. It's rainy, but there's no snow. Mm. It's still shorts weather.
Well, that's good.
Echo.
Yeah, it'll go away. I don't know what that causes that.
What is cold for your neck of the woods there, Murray?
25 degrees.
Cold for me is below zero. There has to be snow and no wind.
That is very, very cold.
Snow but no wind?
Yeah, like if it's windy, then it's cold. But if it's not windy, I can be outside and it's, you know, it's okay.
Really?
Are you one of those cold weather lunatics who goes out in shorts and flip flops in the snow?
Not flip flops. No. I wear shoes and boots and and socks.
Are you still in shorts?
I'm still in shorts right now.
Well, that's good.
We've had a little bit of snow, but it's been like. It's only lasted a day or two, and then it's gone. So really, that doesn't count. That doesn't count. We're still in late fall.
How funny is it that I'm wearing slippers and a sweatshirt and a cap? I'm so cold here in Arizona.
Wow.
Oh, I figure everything south of the border is supposed to be hot. Especially Arizona. Arizona, isn't that like Hotville?
Yes. That's the problem.
It's a dry heat, though.
And it gets up to 115 degrees in the summer, so when it gets down into the 40s and 50s, that's a 70-degree flip.
Oh, hold it. The 40s and 50s, that's your cold?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was about what it was okay. In Mississippi, too.
Okie dokie.
But that is not, it's 40 or 50 right now. Yeah, cold is pretty cold. Especially if the heater in your car doesn't work.
I get it. It's all relative.
It's all relative.
Yes, yeah. It is very relative.
What is your high? What is your high up there in Waterloo? Is it like 80-85?
No, it gets up to. Let me translate. It gets up to the 90s, but it's like okay. A hot, wet, sticky 90.
So then subtract 20. You know, add 20 degrees to that, or subtract 20 degrees to that. So. You know, your 40 is my, or your 20 is my 40, so.
Yeah, that's okay. I would happily trade it, and I could live to get used to the hot weather.
We don't have any beaches, we don't have any, it's sad.
Yeah. I hear you.
No beaches.
Oh, well, how about no water? Well, I think they're. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't.
We have lakes.
You have lakes? Okay. Alright, so what were we talking about, everything here on Weathercast?
Well.
Oh, yes, Random Tales from the Long Box. Caleb, you want to give us an explanation of what we're doing today?
Yes. We Long Box, or in my case, Short Box, dived for random issues, two or three random issues out of our collections, reading them to see if they stood the test of time, and then come in and talk about them and say, hey, boy, that's something I need to give away, or I'm really glad I kept that. Is that about sum it up?
That sounds good.
Yeah, that does sound good, actually. Okay. Let's see what else we got here. So, go ahead.
No,
I was just saying, in my case, my long boxes are in storage, so I'm picking random things on that I have bought on Comixology.
So your stuff is going to be of the newer variety then?
Not necessarily. I have bought some older stuff on here.
Okay, cool. This was your topic, so I think...
it was your topic, okay.
I dove into... I set aside some of my long boxes. I wasn't going to dive into any of my Legion or Doom Patrol, because I know those are going to stand the test of time. There's no way. So I picked out my random DC characters box and grabbed one out of there, and I didn't have a lot of Marvel to choose from. Other than...
Wait a minute. Your random DC characters box? What does that mean?
Yeah, I sort my stuff by... I have all my Legion stuff in boxes, all my Doom Patrol stuff in boxes, all my...
Really?
JLA and Titan stuff in boxes, and then anything that doesn't fit into a particular group, my Earth 2 stuff goes in one box, it goes into like a DC character box. So from Adam to... I forget what the... Adam to Zellot. Zatanna. If I had Zatanna... Oh no, Zellot wouldn't go in there because that would be like a independent thing. Then I have my independent box, then I have my Marvel boxes...
Okay.
Yeah.
I actually like that method. That's pretty cool. So Is it alphabetical in the non-Legion Titans boxes?
Yeah, it's alphabetical. Yeah, it is.
Alphanumerical?
Yeah, usually. Unless it's like the DC miniseries box, and then it's chronological, usually.
Chronological, huh? Interesting.
Well, like it would go Crisis, Legends, Millennium.
I used to do that. I switched it alphabetical at one point, but that's really hard to maintain when you got to move boxes around and crap.
Yeah.
I discovered. So I don't know how I'll continue with that. I might just add things to the end and leave it that way.
Yeah, for my DC events boxes and stuff, I like it chronological because then I can read it the order that it happened.
Yeah, exactly. I used to do that too. Mm-hmm. It's a perfect way to do it.
So if you were to like do Crisis, would you then have to shove all those Red Sky issues between issues of Crisis?
I don't think I picked. Well, you know, if I did pick them up, they would be with whatever character or group they happen to be with. I don't file them with my Crisis stuff because really they don't matter.
Oh my!
You know, you can put the explicit tag on that particular comment.
That's funny.
Come on, the Red Sky issues, those totally don't matter.
Come on, Wonder Girl and Firehawk flying through the Savage Land area to find Terry Long. Come on. That doesn't count?
Oh, you know what? I don't even remember if I ever picked that up.
Which one?
And I should have. That would have been like a Firestorm issue, right?
It was a Firestorm issue.
I don't know.
The Firehawk and Wonder Girl teamed up in an issue of Firestorm during Crisis to go find Terry Long, who was lost in time screwed up area of, what, Metropolis or New York or something.
Mm-hmm.
Huh, interesting.
It was incredibly important issue in the pantheon of DC books.
Well, it was important.
I certainly don't remember that one.
It was important to Wonder Girl, probably. So I probably would have stored that with my Teen Titans stuff if I had it, which I don't.
Ooh!
But that's where it would go. It would go with Teen Titans.
Yeah, there's a in that the Crisis. excuse me, Archive Edition. They have a list of all those. I actually thought about trying to track those down, all those tie-ins and stuff. But that'd be, you know, later on when I actually have a place to store them again. So.
Yes.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I think some of them are pretty tricky to find.
I bet it's surprisingly the ones that are the least important are probably the hardest and probably more expensive, you know, relatively speaking. Mm.
Sure. Well, they would have had, like, small print runs, right? Like, you couldn't have imagined that.
Yeah, exactly.
like, I don't know, was Haunted Tank still around? Did it get a Red Sky issue? Like, some of those were.
Oh, I have no idea.
Loser special.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They couldn't have had huge print runs, so they will be trickier to find.
Yeah, I imagine. But, you know, it's one of those things, because, you know, I did the, my main passion was getting all the Dreadstar issues at one point, and I actually got all those finally. And then, all well, Legion ones, I, you know, did that years ago. So, yeah, you need something new, you know? Especially since, you know, back issue bins is even harder to find these days. But so that would be interesting to do.
That's what the cons are good for, the back issue bins.
Exactly, which is something I'm going to do for sure.
But don't go to like a big organized con where there's going to be like celebrities. Go to the little POS hotel ballroom con.
Oh yeah, yeah, like the Wild Pig one.
Oh, even smaller scale than that, where it's like 15 tables and somebody selling swords at one of them, you know.
Oh well, that was for me. That was the last time I went to Chicago Comic Con, Wizard World.
I think that's been Wizard World the last 10 years.
Yeah, ever since they took over. But yeah, that's what, you know, they that's where I got my big stack of started out with reading Spider-Man after Brand New Day, because they had hardcovers for $5.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I picked up a big chunk of X-Men and New Age trades, so they were like $5. So yeah, I carried so much back with me from that con that stuff like that, that I almost had to pay extra baggage fees. So yeah, that, you know, that would be one to do that at, I think.
That's funny. I need to find one of those little POS cons, because my wife has graciously allowed me another half a bookshelf for trade paperback. So I'm
yeah. I'm pretty sure they have one, because I've been to – that was when I – they have one once a month in Kansas City.
What?
Yeah, they have – it's like in a – like you said, it's like in a hotel in a, you know, in a ballroom or whatever. Because I went – the last one I went to was before I moved up to Washington State, and that's where I got my last Legion comic that I needed. Superboy and the Legion number 205.
Ooh, that's a hard one to find.
Yes, it took me 10 years to get that.
Uh-huh.
Help me out here.
It's a giant size one, isn't it?
No, it's a regular size one.
Really? Oh, I'm thinking of a different one then. What's going on in 205?
Oh, you know, I haven't looked at that in so long, I don't remember. It was one of those ones that had multiple stories. It had like I think it had like a roll call on the right by the spine, and it had, you know, those little panels showing the different stories. And
that's not an oversized?
That's an oversized one.
Is it? Oh, you mean, oh, I was thinking oversized as in treasury.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. Oh, but it's got like 60 or 80 pages.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That would be oversized. Yeah, exactly.
Yes. There we go. We had our terms mixed up.
Yes, exactly.
And ironically, one of the comics I picked out today fits that category.
Oh, I love those. Wow. Love them. Alrighty, pulling it back on topic there.
Okay, good.
So I dove into my DC characters, closed my eyes, grabbed one, and I pulled out the Heckler.
Issue
number 4.
Oh, wow.
Oh, not my book. Not my issue. Okay.
I think I have
I don't think I've read the Heckler since it came out, and I wasn't. I had no clue what it was going to be like. I liked it. It was fun. I don't know what the Heckler does. This issue doesn't really...
Isn't that a Keith Giffen creation?
Yeah, it's Keith Giffen, Tom and Mary Beerbohm, and it was put out in 92, so maybe a year into their... No, a couple of years into their run on Legion there, because I think they started that 89, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
So towards the end of their Legion run, maybe. Anyway, the Heckler came out, and I guess the best way to describe him is kind of like Ambush Bug without the teleporting, and maybe not quite as surreal. Like Ambush Bug towards the end got...
I'm trying to remember.
like super crazy, and there wasn't much of a story in his books. It was just gag, 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 funny little homage, and that. But Heckler's got a bit of a story, but it's straight up comedy.
It's Creeper-esque.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So Heckler is some dude in like a yellow and orange and white jumpsuit with ha 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 written all over him.
Yeah,
and
see, Wikipedia gives him his abilities, sarcastic wit, foul language, and the ability of annoying the hell out of nearly anyone.
Yeah, that's
sounds like me, actually.
As good a, as good a definition as anything.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this is kind of a cool – this issue in particular is kind of cool. I'm going to have to dig out the rest. It's got it's very much like a Roadrunner cartoon, this particular issue. Maybe they all are, but this one in particular. It's like if you set Heckler up as like the Bugs Bunny Roadrunner type, and the person he's going up against is called the Bushwhacker. He's more like the Wile E. Coyote character, but the Wile E. Coyote character from that talked, you know, so those cartoons where he would talk and he would go up against Bugs Bunny, or he would go up against the sheepdog or whatever, and he would talk and he'd be kind of educated and kind of full of himself, that Wile E. Coyote.
Much spelled backwards is dumb.
Yeah. Wow. So it is kind of it holds up like the. You see just the pure inventiveness of Giffen's kind of characters in here, and it's like he's got the basic gist of the story is Heckler is going out for a night on the town. He's doing his nightly patrol looking for trouble, and of course he either doesn't see any trouble, or the trouble that he sees is minor and gets fixed by other people or whatever, and this Bushwhacker character has been hired to kill Heckler, and each one of his traps becomes more and more elaborate as the issue goes on, and of course Heckler is completely clueless, backfire, and Bushwhacker starts off completely healthy, and by the end of the issue, you know, he's in a full body cast, and still trying his best to get Heckler, but of course it just doesn't work.
And, that's awesome.
And like Heckler visits, you know, various parts of the town of Delta City, and one of the parts is, oh, it's like a little Christmas takeoff. What do they call it? Is it Elfville or something? Tinseltown. It's called Tinseltown, where all the elves live. And the hero of Tinseltown is X-Miz. And she's this white lady in a Christmas red hood with like ornaments for earrings, and they spell her name X-M-S or M-S, like, you know, X-Miz. But it's funny as it sounds. It really is. It's kind of, it's a cool book. Like, I mean, there's a bit of a story there, but really it's totally played for laughs. And I found as I was rereading it that I was grinning and giggling along, and I'm totally going to take out the rest of the series and see where it goes.
Number 6 in the letters column has a familiar name in it.
Really?
Who is that?
Where are you getting that?
Who could it possibly be? Oh, right. It's me.
Really? Oh, I'm digging it out.
No, seriously?
Seriously.
So you were reading that too, huh?
I was. Two Kevin Dooley series. I made the last issue of what I call that one, and Green Lantern Mosaic.
Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
Kevin Dooley and I used to trade emails and comments all the time on AOL back in the day. And
AOL.
Failed series from Kevin Dooley.
Oh, this letters page is, because it's issue 4, they haven't received any letters yet, so they just run the letters of the alphabet, but they use like the logos from different series, so it's kind of like, what do they say? Try to guess which of the books these logos come from. I'll try to scan it and post it on the Facebook page because I can figure out a couple, like the W for Warlord and the H for Heckler. Probably, I was going to say the L for Legion, but I don't think it is. I think it's the G from Legion. But, yeah, it'll be fun to kind of figure out where these letters came from.
Oh, absolutely.
They don't tell you, but...
That's awesome.
I'm sure if the series had continued, we would have gotten a letters page that listed that somebody figured it all out for.
Yeah, because it was a series that only ran...
6 issues.
Oh, was it 6? Okay.
It was supposed to be ongoing, according to Wikipedia.
Yes, it was supposed to be.
I love it that in the vein of the time, Heckler, in the early 90s, Heckler is spelled without the last E. Or not Heckler, a Bushwhacker is spelled without the last E. It's Bushwhacker.
That's right.
Exactly. That's so awesome.
He doesn't need a last. He doesn't need an E.
That's totally it. So you read a Heckler one too?
No.
Oh, you wrote something for another thing, and that's where it got put.
No, I wrote a letter for Heckler.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry. I misunderstood your question, Marie. Apologies. Yes, no, I was a Heckler fan, and I wrote a letter. They actually had us to meet. I designed a Heckler fan club membership card. I think that if you look in the letters page, the last issue, it's all these,
awesome.
You know, early Photoshop type thing.
Very cool. Very, very cool. Anyway, it's a good series.
I can't remember whether I emailed it to him or snail mailed it. Oh, well, whatever.
Huh.
That's pretty cool.
I guess you could have emailed it then because it was...
Yeah.
Mail was around.
It'd be like, goodbye. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Halfway through downloading it. It was a whole 10 megs, and it couldn't quite make it through.
Oh, yes, AOL. How much I don't miss that. $200 phone bills, terrible.
Goodbye. Huh? Goodbye.
Goodbye to your wallet. But, yeah.
The pirates would have hated those days. Anyhow, hey, that's a good choice. For a random pick, I
lucked out on that one. Yeah, I would. Yeah, if you see it in the back issue bins, pick it up because it's probably only going to be a quarter, maybe 50 cents. It'll be a good read for you.
Cool. And
the only time that series would ever have a chance of being collected is if like Keith Giffen won like the Nobel Peace Prize and DC decided to trade everything the guy ever did.
Oh, maybe if he died, they might do it.
Yeah, I don't think it's. I think it would have to take more than that, actually.
That's funny.
This is one of the most inconsequential things he ever did for DC, yet one of a very cool series. Yeah,
but the funny thing is I mean, you say that. The funny thing is, he read it, you read it, and I remember seeing it, but I don't think I ever read it. So, I mean, it's not that inconsequential. It's, you know, 2/3 of us remember it fondly.
Yeah. They haven't collected any of the Legion, Giffen, Beer Bomb run ever, have they? Like, I don't think any of that is in.
You know, I don't know. I'm behind on I need to track that down. That would be a good thing for the Legion guys to do. As well.
I don't think it's ever been collected. And
probably not. But I bet it will be now that Giffen's going to be a regular artist.
I don't know. I would be surprised if we ever saw the 5-year later run collected. I think.
Well, isn't that already out there a little bit?
I don't think so.
Not the 5-year later. Yeah, you're right.
No, they put it on Comixology, but I don't think.
Yeah, that's right.
I would be surprised if we ever saw it collected. I think DC looks on that particular run of the Legion with sort of, I don't know, as groundbreaking as it was, I don't think DC appreciates it.
Well, yeah, it was in that part of history where they were trying to forget the Legion, so. I don't know. But yeah, I can see.
Either way, we should collect it, and maybe they will. But I doubt it.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, I get you there.
Alrighty, what'd you read, Caleb?
Okay, well, I was going to go with one issue in particular, but given that we're talking about Legion, again, remember, these were randomly picked out, so...
Mine are sort of random, but go ahead.
Well, what I did is I had my daughters... I only have 7 short boxes of physical comics. Let me start saying that.
Okay.
I culled plenty of comics out of my physical collection, and any of the newer ones, very few of them have been worth hanging on to the individuals, so I'm just going to trade those and stuff. So I grabbed out Superboy in the Legion of Superheroes, number 251.
Ooh.
251, that sounds familiar.
Oh, you will know it pretty... I will describe the cover and you will know the whole story.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure it will.
Okay, the cover has featured on it Legionnaires Colossal Boy, Timberwolf, Superboy, and Brainiac 5.
That's the one they're on the asteroid, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, it's way before the asteroid.
Okay.
Asteroid, it is... The Superboy is yelling at this creature on fire, saying Omega has the power to destroy the universe.
Yes. Oh, okay, yeah, I remember that.
And Brainiac 5 is facing us, and he's yelling, "It would do you, it won't do you any good if you do, for I've created another Omega."
Oh, jeez, that's when he was insane. I remember that.
Oh, yeah. This is definitely.
That's what is insane. You'll have to narrow that down.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first time I remember it.
It's hardcore insane for Brainiac.
That's true.
The name of the issue, in fact, is The Man Who Destroyed the Universe. Story and layouts by Steve Apollo.
Right.
Words by Paul Levitz, though.
251.
The finished art was Dave Hines, and then it was lettered by Ben Oda, colored by G. D'Angelo, whoever the heck that is, and editor Jack Harris.
Huh.
Yeah, he edited the team for quite a while.
He did. This is an issue where it starts off with high collar Karate Kid and no clothes. Princess Projectra.
That's still
right.
Karate Kid outfit. Still one of my favorites.
This collar, honestly, God, the way it's drawn, it goes above his head. I mean, this thing doesn't just rise. This thing is like,
yeah, that's awesome.
The corners are sharp. I mean, he's gonna put someone's eye out. And it just starts off with Brainiac ranting about how he's gonna save the universe, and you know, Omega, who he admits to creating, is you know, he'll defeat Omega if they give him power over the whole universe, and then he collapses in the middle of a Hitler-esque rant, and he's got like his hair is all messed up with the piece of strand of hair hanging down the middle of his face, and then he just collapses and starts and then
that's awesome. The comic book DB says Jim Starlin is one of the writers. And penciler is Jim Starlin.
Jim Starlin is Steve Apollo.
Yeah.
It was one of
his...
He wanted his name taken off
the book because he wasn't thrilled with the story, I think. Isn't that how it goes?
Yeah.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. He did the layouts and he did some of it. I think he did the rough pencils. And then this guy... Dave Hunt, whoever that is, did the finishes, and then Paul Levitz did the dialogue. Where after kind of Marvel method like, where he dialogued after it had been penciled.
Okay.
And there's a scene in here where they've got Omega kind of walking across space. I'm trying to think what that reminds anybody else of, but and he goes up against Superboy and Ultra Boy and Dawnstar of all. Badasses.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like a Mordry scene, right?
It does.
Standing in space.
And then and Omega, this the embodiment of all hate in the universe.
Wow.
takes those three out pretty painlessly. And then Projectra dives into Brainiac's mind. There's a great scene where he sits up. He's like, I give you a choice, Legionnaires. Either Omega destroys the universe or I rule it. And then even though Wildfire has no face, you can almost see him just like sighing and shaking his head. He's like, well, he's still a raving loony. And he's like, you know I can do it, Wildfire. You know I can stop him. And there's this whole scene at the bottom of page 9 where Brainiac is rubbing his hands together. He's all blue. He's like, I can do it. And the only way to stop him is you must bring Matter Eater Lad back from his home world at once.
Wow.
This is just great. This one stands out for me. I remember this one when I first read it. I love this particular issue because he's just a psycho nut. And then Omega arrives on Earth. He kicks Timberwolf's ass and Starboy's ass. And then, to my chagrin, he takes out Colossal Boy pretty easily. And he says, and this is a quote from Omega, that one was even weaker than Mon-El or Ultra Boy for all his size and boasts. There must be nothing between me and my goal if they were forced to rely on such as one as that. Colossal Boy didn't fare very well in this particular issue. And then you get a scene where Projectra and Karate Kid try to take out Omega and, of course, get their butts handed to them. And then, I had never seen him do this before, but Wildfire flips his face mask, opens, and this is where we lose that current version of the headquarters, because he blows up the whole Legion headquarters to try and take out Omega.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they had a headquarters for a few issues, at least.
It was quite a few, because they were rebuilding it in, when I started picking it up, 261, 262, they were still building it. They were just building it then. So
Earth War, right? Was on the horizon, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
It had just finished.
Okay. And then Omega confronts Brainiac 5, and Brainiac 5 says, well, you're done because the indestructible machine, the miracle machine which I used to create you, has been destroyed. And Omega's like, no, that's impossible. It's indestructible. How do you destroy it? Well, Matter Eater Lad ate it.
Oh, that's right. I remember that. That made him crazy, didn't it?
Yeah, there's a great panel on page 21 where Matter Eater Lad is lying on the floor and his hands are all twisted out of wacky directions.
Yeah, I remember that.
He's screaming silently. The next panel, they show his eyes are...
That's awesome.
Like, it's full of stars. And then the very, very last word balloon, Superboy is saying to Wildfire, remember, this is 1979. And he says, Wildfire, says, you know, Wildfire, you're turning into one hell of a Legionnaire. Uses the word hell in a comic book.
Oh my.
Not, but it seems that in a code approved 1979 comic, that would be a big deal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a big deal.
And of course, there's some great ads in here. There's sell seeds to win prizes, or there's a Wonder Woman Twinkie one here.
Wonder Woman Twinkie? Oh, awesome.
Wonder Woman's Twinkie. Stripe Maze in here. There's great ads in here. Please, Dan, help me put an end to my skinny body. There's one of those bodybuilding ads.
Oh, Lord.
In any case, this was one of my early issues of Superman. Not my first, but it was certainly... Because I never ended up getting them in any particular order at that time. It was just sort of, I saw one, I'd get it. And you know what was cool about it? It continued from issue 250... But I didn't have to get 250 to understand what was happening in 251. Mm-hmm. I wanted to get 250 because there was some. I was like, oh wow, I'd really like to see how this all came about. But they explained within the issue how it got to that point. Each character was introduced. pretty seamlessly within the dialogue. I mean, it forced it a couple points, but you're introduced to every single character, what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good plot. It's just and this had consequences for a while. The whole thing with Brainiac being nuts. I mean, this is basically a redo of Computo. And that's how it kind of felt at some point. Again, he wasn't crazy when he built Computo, but he didn't fare very well either. And then we got continued much later on for Matter Eater Lad. Again, the destroying of the headquarters.
Oh man, that's awesome.
That lasted, well over a year where they had no headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
Anyhow, that was my random pick out of the box.
Wow, amazing!
Good lucky choice.
I'm gonna go ahead and cut that part out of this episode and send it to Paul so they can use it for their.
There you go.
Totally.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, let's see. The one I picked up semi-randomly. Actually, we'll talk about this one first. Where'd it go? Here we go.
Meeny, meeny, miny, moe.
Okay. And since I have it in Comixology, it's actually a collection, but I do have the issues of all these. It's Garth Ennis's Complete Battlefields, Volume 1.
Ooh.
Garth Ennis is a big history nut, especially World War II. So this series, it's actually a mini series within a series. It was 9 issues, and 3 issues was one story, and then 3 issues with another, and then, of course, continue. Which stories are we talking about? There was one called The Night Witches, which was about female Russian fighter pilots, because they had a lot of people on the lines. There was a point in time where they had women doing that. I'm not sure exact why, but it's about them. I think they were doing the mail at first. It's been a while since I read that story. Then there's one about Dear Billy, which I think that's about an American soldier. I don't remember the details on that one. And there's one called The Tankies, which is about a British tank crew, and it's right after D-Day, and they find a big German encampment that was abandoned by German soldiers, and it's pretty graphic. It's a Garth Ennis book, so I mean there's plenty of realistic gore when people get blown up, there's plenty of foul language, but yeah, so each one of those installments, I really enjoyed them. Not my usual thing, but
this was a Vertigo book, right?
No, this was Dynamite.
Oh, Dynamite. Okay.
Yeah, he does look, because he's writing The Shadow that's out right now, pretty much in the same vein. It's very historically accurate about what the time frame that The Shadow is supposed to be in, which is it's right around 1938 to 40, around in that time frame. And he's kind of playing him as a international spy, which is interesting. He's been, fouling up different operations of Japan and stuff overseas is what I've seen read so far. Not much low-level street crime like you would think, which, I have never read any of the novels that were back there. I listened to the old radio show, so maybe that's what he did before, but anyway. So, it's good stuff, really good stuff.
I remember he did one where it was an Italian No, but what's the word I'm looking for? Italian soldiers.
Yeah, that might have been in the second volume.
It's pretty. I mean, some of it. I mean, it's just, it is very like you said, graphic.
Yeah.
It's not the usual dwarf or humor that you usually get from Garth Ennis, from, you know, say, Ann or The Boys or his Lobo stuff.
Yeah.
It was straight on, this gore is the gore because that's the gore that people were having to
yeah.
to the
group. Yeah, they have the second volume on there, too, as a deal, and if I'm not mistaken, they've got another series, a new one out right now. But I'm not.
Everyone always felt so. They always seemed like covered in dirt in all those stories.
Yeah.
Everyone needs a bath, and I bet, you know, if you're stuck in the trenches, yeah, a bath is low on your list of priorities.
Yeah, I'm sure. So anyway, that's my random.
That's a random pick.
Very cool.
Yep. Surprised it wasn't DC.
I don't know.
Yeah, I tried to pick things that I normally wouldn't talk about. So.
Good old. I don't think I've read any Garth Ennis. I don't think.
That's the first I'd had, and well, he did a Vertigo series called War Story.
Yeah.
First, yep. Those were really good, and that's what made me get that. So yeah, that's where that ties in.
You never read any Hitman?
Read that, that's for sure.
No, I didn't read Hitman. I didn't read any of his Vertigo stuff. I would be hard-pressed to think of a Garth Ennis book that I had read.
Yeah, I'm looking through this list on Comic Book Database, and I'm like, no, you wouldn't have read that. No Demon, I'm sure you wouldn't have read that.
I don't know if I read his... I don't think I read any of his Demon stuff.
There it is.
He did some Hellblazer issues.
Nope.
Okay, kind of yeah.
Dread and 2008 stuff.
His new series is called Battlefields of the Greenfields Beyond, and it's about the Tankies characters from another deal. So I'm going to have to buy those.
Mm.
Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Alrighty. Okay, the next one I picked out of my Marvel box, sort of, except I didn't. I guess I could have gone digging through some of the Fantastic Four stuff or some of the Avengers stuff I have, but but I kept those things out of it. So I just grabbed random Marvel, which limited it considerably, and I grabbed an issue of Where Monsters Dwell.
Wow.
Oh, man, no kidding.
Oh, whenever I see them at a con, I pick them up because they're on little goofy monster books. So this
is
from,
you can hear the typing in the background while we...
This is from 1972.
Wow.
And it's a reprint. I mean, I guess... Yeah, no, it's a reprint book. So it reprints some of the stuff that Marvel was putting out in like the 50s and 60s in there.
What's the issue number?
Number 16.
Okay, so I can see the cover here.
Beware of Googum.
Yes.
Son of Goom.
Yes, it's got a great Gil Kane cover. Like, it's...
That is kind of cool.
Awesome. It's Gil Kane at his, like, Gil Kane-iest, where he's all... It's beautiful. Now, the cover has nothing at all to do with the story. Like, you look at the cover and you see this big orange-red monster shrinking people, and they're, like, being chased by him, and you're figuring, oh... He's probably got some plan to shrink people, and he's going to squish them. And no, that doesn't happen at all. Not a bit.
No squishing?
There's no squishing. There's no shrinking. There's barely any laser beam stuff, but but it's a cool cover.
Dr. Shrinker.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that show. Oh.
Billy Party.
Yes. Oh, I remember that one fondly.
The monster's wearing shorts.
He's wearing green shorts because, you know.
Because some monsters don't like to be hindered when they're smashing and pillaging. You know, they like to have as much freedom as movement as possible. And besides, who wants to see monster bits hanging out? You know?
I think we can all agree after seeing Saga number 7 that nobody wants to see monster bits hanging around.
Oh, you know, I'm behind on that book.
Okay, well, page 16, you just wait for it.
Wait for it.
All right, wait for it.
Look at all the Kirby crackle on the cover that Kane did.
Wow. I know. It's good. It's a funny little goofy book. Yeah. It's illustrated by Kirby. That's what I like about these books too. They
hello?
Yes, someone's phoning. We'll see if anyone answers. I don't think it'll be me. Oh, there we go. Someone upstairs got it.
Well, that's nice of them.
That's right. Because these, I mean, Marvel never, they didn't publish credits at this point, and they didn't let you know where these stories came from, I guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe they wanted you to think they were current. I don't know. But I always like playing guess the artist as I'm going through the book.
Oh, there you go.
And the first story, like the Googam story, is very definitely a Kirby. It's Kirby. Kirby all the way, and the monster is like, kind of like a red thing, except his head is much bigger, and it's all mouth. Like, Googam's mouth is always open. It's like this big, ginormous maw that's always, like, wide open and jabbering away, and it's kind of funny. Basically, yes, they recap the story of Goom, I guess. Goom was the dad of Googam, and he probably terrorized the town for an issue before they sent him. Yeah.
I clicked on the search for this issue on eBay.
Yes.
And it's actually for sale. That particular issue is for sale for $2.80.
Ooh.
Or you can get 11 book lot of that series, including that issue, I think. I don't know. No, maybe not. $74.95. Anyway.
What?
That's what it says, yeah.
$75.
That's 1,000% in.
Yeah. 20. Yeah. They look like they're in pretty good shape, though.
Mm.
But yeah, that you got 9 hours to do that, so.
I gotta know what the second story is, though, man. He who laughs last gets the horse laugh. What the hell?
Oh my gosh! Just wait till we get there. Okay. The Googam story is it's pretty standard monster, right? Goom gets sent away back to his home planet, but fortunately, he leaves his little kid in a cave, and Googam grows up full of righteous anger. He wants to conquer the earth for his dad. He's got daddy issues.
I see.
And, coincidentally enough, the scientist that sent Goom away now has a 14-year-old kid who's home from the military school who decides to go exploring in the caves because dad has no time for him. So you see there's parallels, father issues.
Very nice. That's a good parallel, actually.
None of those father issues are touched on again, but, you know, they're there.
Yeah.
Kid goes exploring through the cave, finds Googam. Googam brings him back home, and then he pretty much just holds the family hostage. He's like, okay, family, you're going to feed me. You're going to take care of me until I'm big enough to take over the world. If you try to tell anyone about me, I'll kill you. So it's like this tense, thrilling sort of, will they get away? Will they not get away? It's almost like a Hitchcock thriller, almost.
Wow, amazing.
Goldilocks.
Mm-hmm. Almost, until...
That's got to be one of the coolest monster names ever, I think.
They had a ton of crazy monster names.
Yeah, I was just looking through the lists on eBay here. I see an ant called, what was it called? Grotu, Grottu, big giant ant. Anyway, go ahead.
There's tons. They have, of course, you have the nosy neighbor, Mrs., what is her name? Sarah Perkwhistle, who wonders what's going on with the crazy scientist, and she sneaks over and she starts snooping around, and then Googam comes out and she's scared off, and that's it for her.
Wow.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
Yep, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I was looking through the list, and apparently Groot's first appearance is in Where Monsters Dwell, number 6.
Really?
I don't know. Well, if that's a reprint, then maybe not his first appearance, but that number 6 has Groot. Anyway.
Very cool. In the end, Googam gets defeated because somehow the kid tricks him into thinking, what is they decide to have a race, or the kid is like, I'll run away and you try to catch me, and if you catch me, you can kill the world, and if you can't catch me, we get to go free. And he leads Googam right into a vat of quicksand,
Gugam sinks, and that's it for him. He suffocates in a big bog of quicksand. Never to be heard from again until Marvel decides to pull him out of... I think they've used him in some of their... In some of their later monster stories.
Interesting.
It
sounds like a concept that a Giffen would do a goofy story.
I think Marvel went through a period a couple years ago where they were visiting some of their monster characters, and so Gugam made an appearance, and some of their other guys did too. And there you go. Now the horse laugh story. Okay.
Not sure
who the artist is. It doesn't really matter. It really doesn't matter. It's the story of two like vaudeville performers. You've got, you know, the horse, the guys that, you know, perform as a horse. So you've got the head of the horse and the bum of the horse, and they work together to be the horse.
The horse.
Okay. Yeah.
So basically it's a story of one dude who's the horse's ass deciding, no, I would like to be the head of the horse for once. And the head of the horse saying, well, I have no problems with that, but the horse head probably has issues with that. This horse head has been in my family for generations. I can't just give it up to you. I'm sorry. That's your lot in life. You're the horse's ass. Sorry. Otherwise, I'd give it to you. And the butt has no, he's not taken any of that for anything. So he kills the guy that plays the horse's head. And then shortly thereafter, he is trampled by the horse costume and dies.
Oh, Jesus.
Yep. That is it.
That sounds like something Rod Serling would write on an off day.
Uh-huh. That is totally it. The police come in and they are there like, yep, he's dead, there's no doubt about it. And I know this will sound like I've got bats in my belfry, but this guy was trampled to death by the front hooves of this dummy horse. And it's oh my. It's exactly what you would expect.
Wow. That's awesome. Then,
yes, there's one last quick story illustrated by Ditko, like really well illustrated by Ditko. Like it's I don't know, sharper or cleaner, or maybe there was a different inker. I can't. But it's real, like it's cool. It's more detailed than I remember his artwork being. Like it's got little tiny lines, and it's really like it's illustrated beautifully. The story is not much to write home about. It is
as long as it's pretty, I guess it doesn't matter.
Comic Book DB says that he wrote, penciled, and inked it.
Yeah, that's what it's. Yeah,
that's, you know what, it's possible because it very much sounds like ideas that Ditko likes to play around with and stuff. So
yeah,
it could be that he was the writer too.
Interesting.
Yep, it's about this magician Gorak. He's the greatest magician, the greatest illusionist in the world, and eventually he convinces everyone that yes, he is the greatest. It takes him a page or two. You know, there are always people that disbelieve that he's the most amazing person in the world, but eventually, of course, he convinces them. He does this big illusion and shows them that yes, he is the best, and they all agree. And then the last page is
oh, that's hilarious.
He starts to grow to this ginormous size, and the audience is shocked, and he's like, "You fools, this entire world is illusion. I, Gorak, have created it for my own amusement." And it gets all existential. He's like, only awesome. I exist. You are all figments of my imagination. That is my startling secret. With a wave of my hand, I make you and your world disappear forever.
And that is quite startling.
Uh-huh. He turns to the readers and he's like, how do you know that you're not merely dreaming? When I awake, you readers will be gone forever. And then he says farewell, and then he vanishes, and then some narrator comes on and says, yeah, you were right, Gorak. No one knows what is real and what's illusion. Least of all you. Least of all a character in the story. Mwahahaha.
Oh, that's awesome.
So there you go. It's kind of fun. I mean, I dig picking these up because you never know what you're going to get. And you usually get, like, some early Kirby or early Ditko or some of the other early Marvel artists. Fun to see what they were doing before they created the Marvel Universe.
Wow.
That philosophy is known as solipsism, where you think that you are all that exists in the world. Huh. Everyone else doesn't exist until you they come into your presence.
Huh. I'll have to introduce that to my grade eights, because they are all victims of that, I think.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people that go to Walmart are, I think, of that, too. Especially when they're walking in the parking lot.
Gotcha.
Like, walking around, nobody's here but me.
Yeah, see?
Yeah.
These comics speak to the human condition.
They do. They're very educational.
Totally.
Wow, that's cool.
Ditko and Kirby and some unknowns. Wow, I'm, okay. I can dig it. And so that's at the story. It does. It sounds the second and third story totally sound like Twilight Zone episodes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
it does.
Yeah.
Especially with that last one with the narrator coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Picture him smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. Just before the credits roll.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Well, I'm going to take us from planet Earth to outer space. I'm going DC again. Again, random pick. I picked out a book from 1984, October of 1984, when the cover price was not 20 cents, as with Monsters That Dwell, but 75 cents, and it was Atari Force number 10.
Oh, man, what a great comic that is.
And that's the thing, is we say that, and we say it over and over again, Atari Force, what a great book, 20 issues plus a special, what a great comic. And you know what? It is a great comic.
I have really never read any of it, so tell me all about it.
Okay, number 10, the cover, it's got this character, Blackjack, who was killed off in an earlier issue. By the way, spoilers. Spoilers for 1984.
Okay.
And Blackjack is crawling out of an air duct, and he's got all these aliens pointing guns at him on the cover. This issue, written by Jerry Conway.
Oh, yeah. I remember. I have an entire series.
Yeah, penciled by Jose Garcia Lopez. Not Jose Luis Garcia Lopez, but just Jose Garcia Lopez.
Oh, I see.
Inked by Ed Barreto. Not Eduardo Barreto, but just Ed Barreto.
What issue did you say that was?
10.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And it was the first story arc for Atari Force was 12 issues. This was number 10 of 12. Mm-hmm. Yep. Bob Lapin lettered it, Tom Ziuko colors, and the awesome Andy Helfer edited this.
Oh, very nice.
Interesting.
Andy Helfer was... boy, if they had to replace what's her name, who just quit from Vertigo, Andy Helfer would be a great guy to bring in.
Oh yeah.
He had such a rapport, and he'd always get the creators to do just a little off center with their books. It's great, and I'm a huge fan. I still am a huge fan of Jerry Conway when he did that Animal Man series about 2 or 3 years ago.
Oh really? Yeah, that's cool.
Anyhow, so the Atari Force was initially an insert comic in Atari game cartridges back in, I don't know, probably 82 or 83.
Yeah, I think I got 3 or 4 of those.
Yeah, I have no idea who did the creation of those, but DC was the one who was producing them, and they.
I'll tell you, some of the art on it is Perez.
Oh no! Shit! Really? Wow.
Yeah. They have it listed in here.
And the interiors as well?
I think so. Yeah.
Housers.
Let me look here. Number one. Oh, I take that back. Ross Andrew. I know he did at least one. Okay, so, continue. No, I guess it was Ross Andrew did it all. That's what it looks like.
So the basic conceit of this Atari Force series that DC decided to do was that was to actually go into the future of those Atari Force mini comics and kind of play off the fact that the Atari was huge at the time and that those little comics actually were fairly collectible and people enjoyed them. So let's write a series not using those characters but using like the descendants of those characters from those mini comics.
Yeah, it was a good idea, I thought.
Oh, it was great. And this issue, that this character Blackjack, who had apparently died in an earlier issue, comes back to life, or just all of a sudden appears, and he hooks up with his lover Dart, who actually was really hot. Garcia Lopez draws some really hot women.
That was one of my favorite characters.
And Murray, you've got to dig this series up. Honest to God, you would love it.
I think I would. Yeah, I'm gonna have to dig through the back issue bins next con I'm at.
I wonder if that's on Comixology.
Doubt it. But Blackjack is basically a pirate character. There's even a scene in this comic book. Again, this is 1984, and I think this is pre-Titans number one. I don't know for certain.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually show this character Dart and this character Blackjack post-coital.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
In this issue.
I remember that.
Yeah,
she's got tattoos all over.
Mm-hmm. Page 11. 11 pages into this, they actually are post.
Would it be pre? Crisis was 85. And Teen Titans was around for a little while. It's probably close. It's close, I bet. I wonder which one came first.
Mm-hmm. Huh. Well, I would. Obviously, Titans would be a higher profile book. So if
it got that.
And it was a number one, so it probably would have gotten a bigger factor or oh my gosh factor. This was. I mean, and there's some great characters in here. We had Pack Rat, Babe. We had Martin Champion. Christopher Champion or Tempest, who had this teleporting power.
Tempest and Dart were my favorite, but I liked Tempest a lot. His name was Christopher too, so I like that.
And his look was so 80s. I mean, he had the headband and pockets and stuff. But the designs were amazing in this. Garcia Lopez did some of his best work on this book. I don't know if he continued for the whole series. But he definitely made it at least through the first 12 issue story arc. We had a little hookah character who was just all he could say was hookah, and I think they even did an issue where he like saves the day. In the
yes, they did. I remember that. That was great.
And who else was in this? We had Morphia, who was this empathic kind of. Mother figure who hung around. She was bald, big-headed alien character. Martin Champion, who was the sole carryover from the original series comics, was their leader, and he sat around with his receding hairline, smoking a pipe, and he was in pursuit of the Destroyer, who was the big bad in the storyline. There was a feel of it that almost like they were like pushing. They could easily transition this into a toy line.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of,
absolutely, they could have.
G.I. Joe-ish, but they didn't. I mean, obviously, this didn't sell anywhere the numbers that made that a possibility. But I this held up. I mean, we talk constantly, or not constantly, but I will constantly refer to Atari Force as a great comic, and it is. It absolutely is. And you know what? This is actually, I think this is pre-New Titans 1 because there's a Meanwhile column in here where Dick Giordano talks about he and Bob Rozakis going to the Sparta printing place and looking at proofs of New Teen Titans number 1.
Oh, that's cool.
Excellent.
Oh, and this has got a great Meanwhile column in there talking about Camelot 3000, Ronin, Thriller, Vigilante, all the stuff that was on the Baxter paper. And you can get 12 issues of Swamp Thing, the Alan Moore run, for $6.
Wow.
You could get a subscription if you were willing to cut your comic book up.
Oh, I hate it when they do that.
Warlord action figures. And there's a great, I mean, Garcia Lopez, again, he knocks out of the park. There's this one page where there's all this action going on. They have the narrator of this action, this guy, Dr. Orion, I think his name was. I have it in my notes. Yeah, Dr. Orion. And his face is kind of meshed in with the action that's going on. So Garcia Lopez had to draw his face as part of a bigger picture, almost like one. Find the face in this picture kind of things. But honest to goodness, this book holds up, and I am going to dig out my 20 issues and read the whole series again, just based on reading this number 10. And again, like all the comics at this time, this is number 10 of an ongoing series.
And right.
I picked it up, and I have knowledge of the book, but I could have read this and known who every single character was. Mm-hmm. The basic character trait was, what their powers were, what happened in the previous 9 issues.
Yeah.
And still get plenty of new story to carry over into an issue 11, issue 12, etc. Again, another book, I didn't have to get the previous issues, but I want to get the previous issues. And there's no previously box, which is what I harp on constantly about New 52, which they need. Well, they're not willing to do what, Jerry Conway or Paul Levitz are willing to do in these comics, which is include some, little bit of synopsis into the story.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Did you get the Atari Force special that they did a couple of years after the series ended?
Oh, yeah.
That's a great one.
In my short box out there.
Yeah, that's it had like 3 stories in it. It was really good.
And is that the one that has the hookah story in it? Maybe
I think it does have a hookah story in it. But I think you're right that there was one that had just him in it.
It was just him and Babe were fighting bats. Babe was this overgrown, baby. Who just walked around like he was the muscle of the team.
Oh yeah, tell me about it.
God, Murray, you would dig this book, and Chris, clearly you read it and dug it as much as I did.
Oh yeah, I loved it. It was great. I just did a look on that Hucka character. Clicked on ComicDB. Apparently, he was in the Ambush Bug Stalking.
Yes, he was.
Special. Shocking.
He was.
I think I have that issue too.
Gibbon would never pull out vague characters to make them up in LA.
Oh, yeah. 1001 uses for a dead hookah.
Oh,
that's what the story name is. Oh, wow. That's awesome. That is awesome.
They can never reintroduce this series. I mean, it just wouldn't work today, but it's a shame that it didn't continue
I agree totally.
At the time, and the sales weren't there for whatever reason. And
yeah.
It kind of unfortunately was right in the coattails of Atari, as Atari was fading out a little bit. I think it was the 2600 or something like that was the.
Yeah, see, I'm sure Atari had something to do with it too.
Yeah, they probably were like, no, we don't want that name associated with the comic book.
Yeah, something like that. I have a feeling that's probably involved.
I think there's probably a story there somewhere. And there was, in television was coming out at that time, and ColecoVision, and I think there were early Texas Instruments were kind of starting to invade the market a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember that.
So, in any case, my gosh, were they actually in an issue of DC Comics Presents too?
Was that like a...
No, it's a House of Mystery. Never mind. I don't know why it's referenced here on Comic Book Database.
Hmm. Interesting.
Did they appear...
Oh, it has the Atari Force preview in it. That's why.
I was going to say, yeah. They appeared before their series as a...
Yeah, they even made it into the...
insert.
the Who's Who number one, as a matter of fact.
Interesting. So they were considered part of the DC universe. Interesting.
In some way or form, yeah.
I guess everyone was. Everything that DC published at one point was part of their DC universe.
Yeah. They even did an update, and they made it into 87 update, it looks like, too.
That's special.
Even though it's special.
A great single issue.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome art, awesome dialogue, great plot. It makes me, again, want to go dig out the previous 9 issues and the issues.
That was one of those, when that was out, I was about, what, that was around when I was like 16. I always looking forward for that to come out. It was good 84? Stuff.
There you go.
Yeah, 84, I would have been, because I was 16 and 86, so yeah, you can do the math there. Oh, wait, there wasn't supposed to be any math, I forgot, sorry.
And number one, oh my god, I mean, just basic covers, and everyone was a stereotype initially, but Conway just fleshed them all out.
Gosh, yeah.
It started January of 1984.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I think that's around the same time that Spanner's Galaxy comic came out.
Probably. That sounds about right.
They were doing a lot of science fiction stuff like that. You guys ever read that?
Mm-hmm.
No. I remember seeing it. I didn't ever pick it up.
Well, you know what? I think that'll be my next one.
Okay.
I had something else. I'll just throw that in there.
And the tagline for this one, real quick, Murray, introducing the strangest science fiction heroes of all.
Yeah, I have to. Oh, this is interesting. Okay, this is a little note here. It says, the miniseries ended on a cliffhanger has not been heard from since its ambiguous ending, while almost unheard of. The phrase, "Where is Spanner's Galaxy?" does appear on a piece of paper on the floor of Rip Hunter's laboratory in number 52, number 6. I guess it was supposed to be... Yeah, I don't know. Let's see. What does it say? Straddling event that takes place in the future from the main book. It's unclear from its text alone whether Galaxy was a pre- or post-crisis title. However, as it was referenced in Who's Who, Definitive Director of EC Universe number 87 appeared to be technically a post-crisis title. It says it is the holder of an obscure comic book first. It was the first book published using World Color's then new Flexographic Press. The press used water and not oil-based inks. This made the colors much more vibrant on the same paper than various processes. However, this process also emphasized color separation and registration errors. Also used rubber plates, meaning that the pages printed late in the particular run were obviously of lower quality than those printed in the earlier run. Basically, this series, it's set in this future, and you got – how should I explain it? There's this thing called castling that you could do. This guy, the Spanner, was one of the first humans that could do it. This had Tom Andrick pencils. Nick Cuddy was a writer. He penciled and inked his own work. John Costanza was a letterer. Alan Gold, editor. Cover artist, But basically, it's set in this distant future, and there's this, like, race. They're kind of like humanoid... horses, and it's like they don't really hint. They kind of hint at it that maybe the either got the whole concept of chivalry and the knights of old from Earth, or the other way around. They gave it to us, and that's how they ran their society. And they had this ability to do something called castling, and the concept was things in the universe are all connected together. All the matter are all connected together by tiny wormholes, right? And by doing the purpose of castling, of course they had rules for doing it, you could use, once you've been trained, you can use the process and contact another person and do what's called castling, like the move in chess, and basically switch places in space, no matter what the distance, with another person. So that's kind of what got me into it. But yeah, I've had that six issue series for a long time, and the main character gets wanted by the entire galaxy, and he has this kind of axe thing blade that that race used as a weapon. And it's kind of like a boomerang. It could deflect energy blasts and things like that. And it's just his story of, you know, trying to get away from, you know, I think some kind of murder or something, but of course he didn't commit it. And it's just high science fiction. It's a really good book.
So it was intended to be more than six issues, is what it said.
Yeah, that's what it says here, and I didn't know, which it makes sense because it did have the ending was kind of like left you in a thing, and I guess some people, there is there were some people saying that it was going to be a 12 issue series. Yeah. Some collectors refer to this as a maxi series and some a mini series. The confusion is understandable since DC couldn't make up their minds either. Five of the issues are labeled six-part mini series, but issue three refers to itself as being part of a maxi series.
So it was always intended to be six issues then. So they left it. They left the
clipping. Well, yeah, at first, but if they put three, maybe they were thinking about expanding it and then they changed their mind. But anyway. It's very interesting because, you know, he'd castle with somebody and end up someplace he didn't know, you know, and so you'd see a whole other part of the galaxy. So, but anyway.
Is it on Comixology?
No, I doubt that.
It is not.
But, yeah, it's a pretty good book. It's really, I'm sure it'd be really hard to find, but that's one of those one-off series. I still have all the issues, so. Very interesting.
Yep. All over the place.
Yes. Ooh. And that was a DC book.
Yes, yes, it was.
Emphasis on was.
Yes. Yeah. And I had. What backups did you guys have? Or did you have any?
I grabbed. Out of my independence, I grabbed Savage Dragon, and it happened to be...
Savage Dragon, I got some trades of that.
Yeah, I grabbed... I went through this phase where I was into the Savage Dragon, so I grabbed issue 76, which was the first issue of his brand new direction, when it was like... I don't even know how he got to the... position that he was in. I guess he was fighting some big bad guy and there was a big explosion and the world got rewritten or whatever, and he ended up in a in a world that was very savage.
Huh.
Almost like Commandy.
Oh yeah.
It was very much like Eric Larson does Commandy. So Savage Dragon is now in this world with giant monsters and big bugs and every issue was a crazy adventure, and the first issue must have worked because I picked it up for a good, I was going to say a good 2 years, right? Almost up to issue 100.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of liked it. It was like you didn't need to, I didn't feel like I needed to know anything that was going on before issue 76. Like it. I think anything I needed to know was in the book. Probably if you had been reading it from the beginning, you would have had a different experience because the characters that were reintroduced, you would have had a different feeling about them and how they appeared in the new continuity. But it all worked for me, and I ended up following the book for, almost 2 years, I think.
Wow.
I think I've read one issue of Savage Dragon ever.
I got on a kick there when I was running out of stuff to read. I just decided out of the blue to like hunt down a Savage Dragon, the first trade. I got it on eBay for like $5 or something like that. And I ended up, it's like, yeah, you know, I got into some 90s nostalgia apparently, and I started I picked up the first couple of trades of Spawn too.
Because
I followed that for a long time and ended up selling all my issues. So yeah, I plan on playing with that. So anyway.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I think in the end I stopped picking it up just because the book never came out on any sort of regular schedule. I think this is when Larson was the publisher or the editor-in-chief or whatever he was. So
I saw some stuff about that.
It would be monthly, and then it would sometimes not come out, and you'd be waiting, and you'd miss an issue because something came out and you weren't thinking to look for it, and I didn't think to put it in my pull box, so... Mm-hmm. So, eventually, I just stopped grabbing it because it was never on any sort of regular schedule. But I enjoyed it. Like it was, if you enjoy reading like those Kirby Commandy issues or
anything
similar. Like it,
I think Caleb's typing.
Tickety tickety tick. No, I mean it's good. Like each issue was kind of standalone. There was an adventure. There were ongoing threads that kind of. Were picked up from issue to issue, but you could pick up any issue and just enjoy
jump
it
in,
for
huh?
it was. Yep.
Interesting.
It worked for me.
I think, and Eric Larson, he was always of the mindset that, and again, I say this as someone had already said that I didn't read the book, of the mindset that make sure that you have every issue be accessible.
Mm-hmm.
You can jump in at any particular point and still go, okay, I know who's who and what's what, and but let's move on from that point.
Right.
Which is cool. Good for Mr.
You could. And, I mean, it had great letters pages. It would go on for a page or two or three, and they were always... Like, I like when creative teams answer their own letters, and they answer them... Mm-hmm. Honestly, and kind of, well, or at least it sounds honest, right? Like, it just had a good vibe. It had personality is what it had.
I bag on Bendis all the time, but I always did enjoy looking at the Powers letters page.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that is awesome, yeah. They reprint a lot of that in the hardcovers.
Good idea. Absolutely great idea.
Yeah, and there was several pages on some stalker he had, which was very interesting.
Someone shaving?
I don't know. I don't hear that.
That was our dryer. Our laundry's done.
Oh, okay.
I can now wear clean clothes today.
Well, that's always good.
It is.
I think we all are breathing a sigh of relief. Right?
Yes, yeah. I think we did.
No. Absolutely.
And comic book fans all everywhere suddenly felt a lightness.
Right.
That's hilarious.
My other issue, and I actually didn't finish reading it. It's not because it wasn't fun, it's just because it was very long. Was Justice League of America number 112. Here comes TV Super Friends. That'll give you kind of the time period. It was actually 1974. It was coming out bi-monthly. This was the July-August issue. It had an original story of the Justice League trying to recover half of their superpowers by reviving a Mazo to piss him off to be able to collect in their superpowers.
Wow, interesting.
Honest to God, it was actually surprisingly difficult read. Those just not quite Bronze Age, not quite Silver Age stories, boy, didn't quite, the dialogue wasn't strong, the actual art was good. It was Dick Dillon and Dick Giordano. Mm-hmm. The story was Len Wein, so, you know, it had some good Green Arrow dialogue in there.
Oh, that.
And Julie Schwartz is the editor on it. I remember picking this up because it had some reprints in it of a Seven Soldiers of Victory story.
Yep.
It had a reprint of an old Justice League story for the Super Exiles of Earth.
Mm-hmm.
and it had a Starman story in it. I mean, this was 100 pages for, at the time, the cover price, and I don't remember whether I got it. I'm sure I didn't get a cover price, but mm-hmm. 60 cents.
Huh, interesting.
And this, my copy is literally falling apart. I mean, I opened it up and pages are falling out of it, so.
That's funny.
Get out the tape.
Yeah.
Get out the tape, yes.
Oh, that's scary.
But, I mean, 100 pages for 60 cents, and, you know, granted, there's only one new story in here, but mm-hmm. they don't, you know, they don't pretend. Oh, my God, an Amazo's original outfit from back in 1964.
Oh, really?
Yikes. I mean, this guy was wearing a halter top at the time.
Oh, yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
And they actually made a point of Black Canary redesigning his costume in this as they revive him to try and kill the Justice League. Black Canary takes time out to redesign his costume.
Oh, wow.
Okay, Amazo, we'd love to fight you, but this just isn't working.
Yes. These colors, they're terrible.
Oh, no, she kept the color scheme, the green and yellow, but...
Oh, wow.
She put a big A on his belt and did that V thing that he always wore where it covered up his nipples.
Wow. Huh.
But one of the goofiest things in here is that in the previous issue, I guess 111, Libra was the villain. He stole half of six of their characters' powers, including half of Batman's superpowers.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Which is why he's only half as grumpy.
That's right.
Yeah.
He spends this whole issue kind of moping around, very emo, like, because he has half his confidence and half his willpower and stuff. It's like,
oh, wow. Oh
my God, stretch the point a little bit, why don't you?
That's hilarious.
And the Flash is only half as fast, and for some reason, Green Lantern is only half as green. I don't know. It's
So he's what? Is he what? Hunter Green or what?
I don't know. But I always had a fondness for Amazo, and
that's a serious character.
And I always had a fondness for Starman and the Seven Soldiers of Victory. So this mm-hmm. was tailor made for me.
Yeah, cool.
And the cover—it's one of those covers you were describing earlier, like that Legion, where along the left-hand spine it has the headshots, and then it has. You know, three or four, little snippets or cover shots.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, that was my other one. But again, I didn't finish it, so I can't really do it huge amount of justice other than to say, you won't find this in a quarter bin probably, unless it's my copy where the pages are falling out. It's not on Comixology. They have 111. And it skips all the way up to 120. So I'm thinking during that period, it was a lot of reprints were going on in Justice League.
Yeah, I'm sure they are.
In any case, fun stuff. Again, a random one. I'm realizing I kind of limited myself on what I retained in hard copies. I need to go through and actually probably only have about 7 or 8 full series in my short boxes.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
In any case, there we go. That is my
There we are. I think we're we covered this good, I think. What do you think?
Yes.
Oh, and we should bring up, last couple weeks ago, I don't remember what episode it was, we were talking about changes in the creative teams and stuff like that, and I believe I made the statement, yes, Gail Simone is still on Batgirl. I think the very next day after that episode dropped, or it was like last week, maybe it was like 2 episodes after we said all that, but apparently she was fired by email off the book. So those guest writers, there's probably a reason for that. So, So she got fired off of that book, which I think is a big mistake because that's probably the only thing keeping that title alive. I could be wrong. But anyway, there's a little update on that.
Yeah. So,
very sad.
In defense of DC, we've only heard one side of the story.
Yeah, this is true. Yeah, she does. I don't know if she's actually said anything or not. I haven't looked it up. So, but anyway, yeah, that's some big news there.
Yeah, we'll miss her.
Yeah, well, I'm not reading that book, so I guess I won't miss her. I stopped reading it. I'm reading it.
All right, well,
right now, but you know.
You're not even going to read the Death of the Family issues?
Oh, I've been reading those. I got those back up, so yeah.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm not reading the others.
Gotcha.
So.
Hey, and real quick, to anyone with kids, you know, hug them. Hug them
tight. Yeah, it's been a rough time, hasn't it, for that. It's a sad thing.
Give your kids a hug. Yell at them all you know, as normal, but hug them at the end of the yelling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point.
Excellent.
Yeah. So, anyway, not much else to say about that.
No.
Nope.
That was fun. Good, Murray. Thank you for suggesting this.
Yeah, it's a good good idea. I like to do. You know, that was actually one of the ideas I had for doing episodes. Is exactly something like this at one time. So yeah, I'd forgotten all about it until you mentioned it. So yeah, this is a good deal.
Excellent.
The downside is now I got to pull out those boxes and put these books back.
Yeah. See, you need drawer boxes. That's what you need.
Oh, God.
See, I've got like how many? I've got over. I'm close. I think I had 48 is what the number was that we loaded in the storage unit. So yeah.
If you could see the quality of my comics, the physical quality, mm-hmm. not worth it.
Not there. Oh, okay.
No, these are all reader copies.
Oh, okay.
There are
all right then.
I stopped collecting many, many, many moons ago. I only kept what I would be willing to reread. And now I realize I need to reread Atari Force.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good. If you're going to reread one, that would be a good one to do it. Mm-hmm. So, all right then. I think that's about it. As usual, you can give us a email at podcast@talesfromthelawnbox.com. You can check us out on the Facebook page, which, you know, work is keeping me from actually reading those as much, but a lot of good conversation going on there.
I think we just got member 100 on.
Why? Yeah, I see that now. 100.
And even 100.
Yeah.
And everyone, and it's 100 participating people. It's not just 100.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we have a pretty focused group, but they all do seem to jump in. So, but anyway, yeah, the Facebook page, do a little search in the searchy box for that, or you can actually comment on the episodes themselves on talesfromthelawnbox.com/the show. Just got through while we were talking, updating the site to the new WordPress and securing things. So it's up and running. And we should have this when you're listening to this. It'll, you know, be Monday. So, anyway, that's about it for this episode.
I can dig it.
That's it, and we're out.
All right, catch you later.
That was fun, guys. Good again.